Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. Now, I suppose that there's some people out there who remember the early days of the internet. One of the first websites that I ever visited was the website for Radio Nederland. This is way back in the early to mid-1990s. And back then, if you did surf the internet, first you had an extremely long URL that you had to enter correctly or nothing would happen. It's not like today where you don't even have to put the www anymore. You could just put moogawooga.com or whatever it is, right? But back in those days, you had to put everything. The second thing, of course, about those days is that everything was only text-based. Pictures, which were used on occasion, were very difficult to open, especially if you only had a 14K modem. And even a 56K modem, it still was rather slow. As for audio and video, well, forget it. Now, of course, everything has changed dramatically and keeps changing all the time. Now, what are some of the more interesting ways in which websites are designing their sites or story pages for news consumption? From a stripe-back, almost text-based-only style, to designs that take the web beyond simple magazine layouts and transplanting them online. We now take a look at some of the new ways you can get your daily fix of news on the net. Justin Sinclair is an experienced designer for the radio multimedia platform at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. He speaks next to Richard Ady.
That's actually two interesting kind of things going on at the same time. So one is to say that, you know, people are using these kind of tools like, you know, Instapaper or something like Flipboard or what have you, to essentially kind of strip out, you know, all the kind of extraneous information from an article. They're saying, look, I'm glad that you've got 17 ads on your desktop website and that you've got 24 different kind of calls to action telling me, hey, how about this over here? How about that over here? That's great, but I actually, you know, can't read that way. And so they're actually saying, you know, give that content to me in a way that kind of strips all that stuff out. And that's kind of suitable both on, you know, like for mobile or also on a desktop. And there's another kind of thing saying, you know, look, as a reader, I want a really, you know, evocative kind of rich experience, which sort of gives me more than the text. And that's about saying that, look, there are a bunch of people kind of publishing much more sort of magazine style kind of layouts that, you know, are rich with imagery, you know, animation, movement, as well as the text to kind of, you know, I suppose, be evocative and give you that sort of experience, which is more than just the words.
That's going to lend itself to different things. And actually, the way you have talked about this, there's what you might call art-directed content, and there's, I suppose, novel presentation. Let's talk about the art-directed content. You've already touched upon it. You've got a few examples from the lightest approach to the heaviest. Mm-hmm. So this one is from a website called The Morning News with the slightly unpromising title of 99 Bottles of Pee on the Wall. What are they doing here?
Apart from having a really evocative title, that I think which is great, Morning News is a dedicated kind of online publication, and what they do is A, have, you know, incredibly nice sort of type and design, but B, they're doing custom illustration for a lot of their articles, and they're sort of laying them out, you know, really beautifully with kind of nice big pull quotes and, you know, arrayed through the article.
It's like a magazine with not too much illustration, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you've largely got like a single kind of nicely set out sea of type, but they're sort of just bringing it to life with little kind of touches here and there.
All right. Well, in the next example, it's a completely different approach. This is something from Boing Boing, which is a very well-known, long-established and very influential blog. This particular story, it's about getting on with things. More Rock, it's called. And it uses those sort of stylized images that we first saw in gaming technology emerging in the 80s.
Yeah, it's a really beautifully done piece. And yeah, they've got this sort of, you know, great 8-bit Nintendo, you know, Sega Master System aesthetic. And doing these, you know, lovely kind of custom illustrations, you know, sitting on, you know, nice kind of charcoal background, breaking up what is a pretty fun sort of, you know, call to action, I suppose.
And it beautifully illustrates what they're talking about, which is the difference between saying something and seeing something or doing something.
That's right. And it's a really powerful connection of that imagery to the text.
All right, well, let's go to the, I suppose, the heaviest example of all. This is from ESPN, the sport broadcaster, and they have a very good website. The story is the long, strange trip of Doc Ellis. This is a pitcher who, in 1970, the story goes, it's quite mythologized, this. He was high. He was having an acid trip, and he had to go out and pitch. Didn't think he'd be playing. Had to go out and pitch, and pitched what the Americans call a no-hitter. No one was able to hit him that day.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. If nothing else, you know, you should just go and read this story, because it's a really fun kind of read.
And it's amazing how it's been done. It's not just the story. So there's pictures of him, and as you scroll down, the text moves, but the picture doesn't, until all of a sudden it does, and we get a close-up, and we get a key part of the story highlighted, and then we go down further, and we get a ticket stub from the day, almost. That's what it looks like to me. And it's just a very, very rich visual environment.
Yeah, some of the other pieces we've been looking at today are drawing a lot from, you know, what we might call kind of magazine layout and sort of editorial print design. And this sort of definitely has that aspect, but it takes it further.
Mm.
So what you're seeing is kind of, you know, inspired by things like, you know, pan and zoom in a movie or movement in games. And so what you have is, you know, different kinds of elements are scrolling and panning at different times. It's very rich, it's very visual, it connects amazingly well with the story, but it's the most experimental of these. Because like some of these kind of techniques, you know, do, I suppose, risk, you know, being zhuzhy, you know, look at me, rather than being about sort of going, well, this is an article and the kind of key thing is the text in it.
That's a nicer word. I would have said risk being wanky. Zhuzhy sounds better. Let's talk very briefly about novel presentation. So not the art direction as much. We know from the Global Mail, which I still think is good, that horizontal scrolling doesn't work. They eventually abandoned it. Nobody really liked it. There are other things too. ITV in the UK are doing this thing, their own sort of scrolling approach. What are they trying here, actually?
Well, this is about sort of saying, you know, what is the form of a news site? And so we're kind of used to, you know, news sites like, you know, Sydney Morning Herald or The Age or New York Times being, you know, sort of an array of different stories with kind of like small excerpts. And then, you know, you kind of, you know, from this sea of stories, you're supposed to pick something out, click and kind of go and get the detailed version of that. And ITV News have sort of turned that on its head.
It's a vertical thing, isn't it? It's, you kind of go up and down, and you can always go back up to the top by clicking on an arrow.
Yeah, so they're doing a thing which says that, you know, news is a stream of content, and it happens, you know, in a time order, and that time order is important. And so it's kind of supporting that, okay, what's just happened? And they're actually doing a little bit more than that, because they're pulling out, they go, well, okay, not only is it just a stream of all the stuff that's happening, but they go, look, for today, and maybe even for this week, there's maybe, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 different things, and we'll pull that out. And we'll kind of give you direct navigation to, you know, what we think are the most important things. So unlike a traditional newspaper where you might have, say, your politics section, you might have an environment section, you might have a lifestyle section, they're saying that, look, you know, the important story for right now is that the Church of England is, you know, refusing women bishops.
Okay.
And giving you that as a kind of a key pull-out.
It's almost the opposite, the next example, isn't it? This is Evening Edition, which is once a day just putting together what they think is the most important stuff.
Yeah, that's right. So it is actually almost the complete antithesis of ITV News. ITV News sort of supports that. I'm going to keep on going back. I'm going to keep on checking in. What's latest? What's now? Whereas Evening Edition says, look, you know, you've probably got too much of that in your life.
Yes.
You know, you've got like so many things you need to be on top of, so many people you need to kind of keep track of. And it is drawing on that sort of old kind of print tradition of there being like a morning edition of a paper and an evening edition of the paper. And the evening edition of the paper would sort of say, you know, this is all the important things that you needed to know that happened today.
I want to talk about one more example, and this is, it's somebody who's taken what The Guardian is doing, so a very well-known paper, a very well-resourced website, and actually giving it even more of a tweak. This is guardian.gifford.com, and what we're getting is one story at a time.
Yeah, so Phil, he's a great designer from the UK, by the way, had this idea that when you read a paper, there's a sense of completeness. Like you can go from the start of the paper to the end of the paper and go, I have consumed all the news that's fit for today. And what he was seeing is that on, you know, news sites, there is no sense of completeness. Like there's like this endless sea of content.
Yes.
Kind of going, you know, forwards and backwards. And it's like...
ITV's got the endless river of content that keeps flowing. We've just talked about.
That's right. And so his thing was like, it's actually very satisfying to kind of think, well, I've read all the news that's fit for today. I can rest easy. And also he's kind of like... A traditional newspaper site like NY Times, you know, you've got like, I think on the homepage they have close to 100 different items that kind of counted one day, which is nuts. Don't do that.
No.
And they're asking you to make a lot of choices. And he's saying, let's strip out choice because choice, you know, is kind of a stressful sort of thing to impose on people. And we're actually quite good at kind of going in linear fashion. So he's saying, look, you know, you can look at one article at a time and you can quickly decide whether you care about it or not. And you can flick to the next. And so you can use your kind of, you know, arrow keys to kind of just go, yes, I care, yes, don't care, yes, care. Oh, that's an interesting one. Let's stop. Let's pause at that. And that kind of maps to the way that people read a newspaper, in the fact that you can flick open a page, you can quickly scan that page, see if you care about it or not, and move to the next.
That was Justin Sinclair, an experienced designer for the radio multimedia platform at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Now, let's talk about satire for a moment. In the last number of years, programs like The Daily Show or Real Time with Bill Maher have changed the way we consume news and information. In many ways, some of these satire programs people would just brush off as just being, well, humor and comedy. But actually, they do a very good job at presenting sometimes the backstory behind the main story itself. News satire, of course, is something that's not new. It aims to combine news, humor, and criticism. But how well does one country in particular respond to it? We're talking about Australians, which do it very differently from, let's say, the Germans, the Brits, or the Americans. And what sort of understanding would you have of the world if satire was your only news source? Richard Ady speaks next to Tom Gleason, host of The Roast, and Nick Richardson, who's a director and presenter of The Roast on ABC2.
Well, it's gone through several iterations. The first was a one-minute voiceover that Nick and I did alongside Charles Firth back for all the Fairfax websites, and that was 2 years ago now. And it was only a couple of months into that where it was a one-minute daily thing on, you know, Sydney Morning Herald and The Age and things like that, that we were approached by, I think, both ABC and Foxtel to do a two-minute show. So they doubled the length of it. And we did that all of last year. I think we did 169 episodes. And then about halfway through last year, the ABC said, let's times it by five and turn it into a 10-minute nightly show or 50 minutes a week. And that's where we found ourselves this year.
So this has all happened quite fast, but you guys have known each other a while, haven't you?
Yeah, Nick and I worked on a sort of number of commercials and projects a few years ago, and then we sort of collaborated on a TV show that we don't even talk about, really. It was not great, but it was an excellent chance to, I suppose, cut our teeth on this type of format, like a very quick turnaround. And also,
you know, I really have to know what show that was, don't you?
It was called WTF, which in of itself is a terrible name. And that didn't last a whole lot, but it was a great chance for some members of this team, particularly Nick and myself, to get to know each other and discover that we had very similar sense of humour and liked each other's style of writing and that wanted to do something down the track.
Nick Richardson, whom Tom just mentioned, sometimes appears on The Roast, but really his primary job is to be the showrunner, the person who gets it all to happen. Nick, like nearly everyone involved, has an intense day and an early start.
It starts at about 7 for the writing. Everyone gets in, then we write until about 10, 10:30, sort of finding stories in that first half hour, and then we do a few group pitches, and then by 10:30 we've got basically a 6-page shootable script. We then do a big full production read-through with the crew and sort of start working out how we're going to make it. And then from 10:30 to about 12, rewriting that, polishing jokes, refining ideas, but not too much because the crew has already started making backgrounds, assets, figuring out how to shoot this sort of thing. So we're shooting by 12, shooting between 12 and 3, and just sort of trying to tear through it as much as we can. And then from 3 till about 4:30, editing, and then 4:30 to 5:15, sound, to have it out the door and hopefully at the ABC by 6.
So with the writing, do you all get in here and what, gather around the papers or what?
Yeah, we've got the papers. We're looking at stuff the night before. It's kind of 24 hours, really. You can't really escape the news like that. But we get in the morning, and I've already got an idea on the sort of bigger stories that I feel like we should be covering. Mark, Jazz, Clark, Tom, everyone sort of pitching other stories that we could be doing. We have a sort of group discussion over papers, websites, TV for about 20 minutes to half an hour to figure out whether or not there's enough in a story to be able to actually do something on it. And then by about 7:30 in the morning, we've picked what we're doing and we break up into small groups to do a sort of 20 minutes, half an hour of hardcore brainstorming that we then pitch back to everybody else and then write for about an hour and knock out a first draft. It's super, super, super tight.
Yeah. So how many of those initial ideas that you've agreed on by 7:30 will actually get up, or will some of them fall over?
It's a terrifyingly large amount of them will get up. That you go, oh my goodness, that was literally the first thing we thought of, and we have to figure out a way to make that work by the end of the day. But usually the process is basically, if it makes us laugh at the table, then it'll usually get in the show. So those ideas, they'll come up, someone will just say a line, someone will have a sort of off-the-cuff idea, and then you go, oh no, I think that actually could be turned into something actually quite good. You go down a rabbit hole of adding far too many words to that, doing far too much writing, completely clouding the idea, and then you do it at the read-through, no one understands what you're talking about. You're like, all right, let's just pair it back to that one line that we said at the beginning of the day that made us laugh. So a lot of it actually gets through, but then in the process, we're doing the brainstorming, we're pitching back to each other, new ideas sort of grow and develop out of that. So, but still, far too many first thought ideas go to air.
This is not how most TV programs are made.
This is not how any TV program should be made, but this is how we make our TV program, and this is the only way we know how to make this. The thing I always wanted with it was the idea that this could be a show that was only made today. The stories we pick are as relevant, as topical as we possibly can get. And that, more importantly, the idea that the whole show as a universe, the idea behind it is that we build a little universe in our show every day. We've got running gags that run through our whole episode. There's a whole logic that runs through each episode. It all had to be made today. If we had pre-recorded segments, if we had packages, if we had generic ideas that we came in, sort of bigger looks into broader issues, that would all have to be made before, and you lose some of that magic of being able to tie everything together by the end of the day. So, yeah, but it's far too short amount of time for writing, far too short amount of time for shooting, far too short amount of time for all the post, but it sort of gets there in the end.
When you got this go-ahead from the ABC for 10 minutes, that must have opened up a lot of different doors and avenues, and I vaguely remember the show last year when it was really short, but this year much more impact. How have you changed it, apart from obviously making it longer?
Sure. That was a huge relief. I think initially some people were concerned that how do you, 500% increase on the amount of work you're doing in effectively the same amount of time. But it gave us an opportunity, for one, to slow down the speed with which we talk. I mean, last year was a race to see who could speak faster and try and get as much content into 2 minutes as possible. So now to actually have the opportunity to just pace ourselves a little bit so that humans can understand what we're saying, but also to explore stories in greater depth. And I think each year the show has undergone such an evolution from when it starts to when it finishes a season. So last year we began almost like a headlines thing of just how many stories can we fit into 2 minutes, set up joke, set up joke, set up joke. And by the end we focused on two stories and then sometimes just one story. This year, similar thing. We've broken it down now to sort of two stories with Mark doing a few headlines up the front. And it really lets you, it's amazing what you can do in 3.5 minutes on a story without an audience or commercials or anything like that to actually interrupt the flow.
It's still fast, though. I'm struck by how fast-paced the program is. It doesn't feel leisurely.
Science is a personal issue for Jensen, as he has a PhD in material sciences and physics. And as his website states, Jensen currently has the highest scientific qualifications of all MPs and senators. That's right, even higher than Glenn the Brick with Eyes Lazarus. But sadly for someone with such high scientific qualifications, Jensen speaks favourably about someone with no scientific qualifications, specifically Lord Bernard we're not really a member of the House of Lords. Monckton.
Most of the stuff he says is entirely reasonable.
Yes, Lord, again, not really a member of the House of Lords. Monckton, the guy who entirely reasonably...
displayed a Nazi swastika beside a quote from the government's climate change advisor, Professor Ross Garnaut.
And I think, call it a curse or a blessing, but without having a live audience, you don't have the opportunity to dwell ever, because if you're not talking and something isn't happening, then it's just silence, and that feels unfunny. I mean, the reason that laugh tracks exist on shows is because it instructs an audience to laugh there, and it says it's okay for you to laugh at this point, and we don't have that option, so we have to fill that space. But the good thing about that is it means we can move a lot further into a story than having to pause and having to throw to commercials.
How much is it about satirising the news, and how much is it about satirising the, I suppose, the medium of TV news that we're used to?
Yeah, well, definitely at the beginning of the year, it was more the idea of doing the medium. It was more the idea of taking what you think is a news show and then breaking that apart. The original tag we came up with was that when news happens, it happens to us. That basically every day we get infected by the news story that we're working on. And then over the course of the year, that got distilled down because we spent so much time looking at so much news, and we were just getting angrier and angrier about what was actually happening in the news. And so, and particularly, I feel like we really hit our straps with the election. And when that rolled around, we just got fueled by a really vengeful hate for everything that was being reported on. And so suddenly we went, well, let's really laser focus in on a very specific part. Like, let's go all politics. But let's not lose the fun that we have with the medium, but let's try and use that to highlight the absurdity of what is going on in the news at the moment. So it's become much more about satirizing the news, but you haven't seen a news show like ours, and that's the thing that we feel makes us special and that we never want to really lose.
So who are the inspirations? Because looking at what you do, I know a lot of people might think, well, sort of Daily Show-ish, but it takes me back further to Chris Morris and Brass Eye, things like that came out of the UK in the 90s.
Right. I mean, for me, obviously, I've watched Colbert and Daily for a number of years, and I think that they're the best two at it. But they're very US-focused, and to try and copy them is just, it's not the right thing to do. They're each very different shows. They found their niche, and I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was one of our writers, Evan, who came up with the distinction between each one. They said the Daily Show sort of breaks down a story into all its components and analyzes a story. The Colbert Report reinterprets a story along conservative Republican pundit lines. What the Roast does, it gets infected by the news story as a way of exploring it and sort of exposing its truths. You know, so if it's a new piece of legislation being proposed, we impart that legislation on the show and see how it might play out on people. Or if it was a new drug, we would kind of explore what it would be like to try it on a person. You know, we let the story take over the show.
So if there's a freneticism about the story, that's reflected in how you present it.
I mean, and that was our election day. The spill happened about the same time that we finished shooting for the day. So we couldn't do it that day. But we thought, well, what we can do is pretend that we have a live cam set up and just sort of broke it down to capture that moment of what happened, obviously, in Canberra, of everyone just hearing news and then going on Twitter and finding out what's this, and everyone trying to outscoop each other. That was a frantic day, so we replicated that freneticism on the show.
It's like saying if you don't get head surgeon, you can never perform surgery again.
Yeah, it is like that.
Or if you don't get first violinist, you can never perform music again. Or if you don't get into NASA, you're not allowed to look at the moon.
Well, that's a bit
or
strange.
If you lose the breath-holding contest, you can never breathe.
We're now hearing that Kevin Rudd is about to announce whether he will in fact be a candidate in the ballot for the leader of the Labour Party. So let's cross to Rachel Corbett, who's live at the press conference waiting for the announcement.
Oh, please, Tom Rudd's not going to contest the leadership. Don't you remember this?
When I say to my parliamentary colleagues and to the people at large across Australia that I would not challenge for the Labour leadership, I believe in honouring my word.
You can't go back on your word when you've said something as convincing as that.
Yeah. Rach?
Today I'm announcing that I will be a candidate for the position of leader of the Parliamentary Labour Party.
Shit! I'm going!
You're right about the running gags through the shows, but what I haven't noticed is sort of running gags over time. It's like you begin again every day. You could lose your anchor at the end of the show, as you did in today when a tree fell on him.
Yeah.
But tomorrow he's going to be fine, isn't he?
Yeah, it's like a cartoon news show. Everyone survives the end of that. But we do have things that run throughout the year. Little things like even the way that my character, if I can call myself that, the way that I come on screen. Originally, I was just a normal reporter. I was doing two-way crosses and that sort of thing. And then over the course of the year, we found that it was fun for me to come in and interrupt Tom. I'm in Tom's space. I'm in Tom's face. I'm getting up in his business there. And so that became a running gag of how do we get me on screen? How do we do that? We had a whole idea that Tom was in love with Rachel and that she was constantly ignoring him. And if you watch, there's little things that come up throughout the season of that sort of thing. But the idea of refreshing every day is actually really refreshing for us. We figured that if we have to do new news stories every day, we have to make the whole thing every day, we may as well just reset it every day so that we can come up with whatever we want to, because it's also a huge playground for all the writers. Everyone is so young. Like, everyone who's writing is so young. Like, too young, far too young. And that I think Tom's the oldest and he's in his early 30s. So it is a learning ground and a training ground, and the idea to be able to just let them unleash whatever they come up with each day and then have the safety to be able to fail as well. Like, a daily show will inevitably fail at some point. You have episodes that aren't as good as the ones as some of your others. You have ones that aren't always the strongest thing you've ever done, but that's the kind of beauty of daily, is that you get to try the whole thing again the next day. And so we take the things that we think do work and we refine and distill those and we keep those and we kind of just triage everything else and try to get rid of it. So hopefully it's working.
So where do you want to take it? What happens next year? Has the ABC already said, yes, we want you back? Or
I am the wrong person to ask about that. I know that there have been discussions. I understand that we're back and that they're very excited. Our ratings have actually, I think, surprised a lot of people for what is, you know, a 10-minute show that hasn't received a whole lot of press at this point, because it is almost an interstitial, you know, stuck in between other things. It's definitely found its audience, and particularly the young audience. And I think for the ABC, that's something that's quite important. So whether it's a case of consolidate and push forward, I'm not sure what the grand scheme is. But I suppose long-term, some form of half-hour show is the idea, but that will kill us. You know?
I was going to say, made at the same frantic pace in which you're doing this now, it's hard to see how you do it.
And there are days, you know, I mean, it's redefined what a slow news day is for a lot of us, because it's not necessarily that there is no news. It can just be that it's the same news. So there's no new news, for instance. And an example was Boston shooting and bombing this year. That dominated the news cycle every single day for 24 hours. And there's no new news. And if you've made whatever jokes you can on day one, it's very difficult to find something new. So that defines a slow news day for us a lot of the time now, that it's not that there isn't any news. It's just it's horrible news. I mean, Syria is not a laugh riot for us. So it can be a huge story and there's not a whole lot to touch on it.
What's your favourite type of story?
Oh, it's tough. I mean, we've definitely recalibrated the show to be more political and Australian, definitely. I think any story that lets you hook into something, not necessarily an outrageous point, but something that you feel passionately about, because the writing just flows easily. I certainly have a soft spot for science stories, which we never touch because they're just too weird, and just the obscure ones sometimes, because I think it's always good to remember that we are not a news show, we are a satirical news show, and that it's sometimes fun just to laugh for a couple of minutes. I think my favourite story of the year so far was actually one, it was a US story, just about the gun industry was bemoaning a new legislation that was passing through New York that was going to make it harder for them to use real guns on movie sets or something like that. And it just seemed, I have no sympathy for that, you know, and the quotes were brilliant and they were getting on screen and just lamenting their lives, and we just took them apart. It was great fun.
And that's all we have time for in this edition of the program. We'll see you in 7 days, 73 and 88 to the ladies.